Hello, welcome to About Regional, a new place for the stories of southeast New South Wales. My name's Ian Campbell, still wrestling with a bit of a cold. Lots of people are. In the depths of a beagle winter, around 70 people turned out to the local campus of the University of Wollongong to hear a local perspective on feminism in the 21st century. Beagle Valley writers group Nomozani posed the question, is feminism still relevant? And a lively discussion unfolded. You'll be introduced to the panel and discover the meaning of Nomozani shortly. Now, the discussion also doubled as the launch for a new local journal. A Kickstarter fundraising campaign runs until the end of September, hoping to turn the journal into a reality. You'll find out more shortly, but to donate, just follow the link in the show notes. Your host for this podcast is a PhD student who's just been awarded the Dean de Bortley Award for Applied History from the History Council of New South Wales for her work and research around the development of the Bundian Way, an ancient Aboriginal pathway that links the far south coast at Eden to the Snowy Mountains at the very top, Mount Kosciuszko. Thanks to About Regional members Tanya Ward, Ingrid Mitchell, Deb Nave and Scott Halfpenny for their support. You'll find more info about membership on the About Regional website, along with more local stories and my contact details. Thanks for tuning in. Your host is Jodie Stewart.
I'm immensely proud to be part of the Nomozani South Coast Women's Journal and to call myself one of its founding members. The initiative started with a conversation between two friends and has grown to encompass wider and more productive discussions and has brought you all here tonight. In February of this year, my dear friend No Lumby and I were conversing about history, opining the apparent lack of women in our local history narratives. Just your standard run-of-the-mill conversation between two girlfriends. Now, with a fire in our belly, we decided to right this wrong, believing that representation, or in this case, the lack thereof, was an important social justice issue for women on the South Coast and the nation more broadly. We put a call out to other like-minded women, and a strong, passionate collective of women was formed. Our initiative hit the ground running in February when we had our first committee meeting. From here, we have pooled our unique skills and abilities and our desire to provide a space for women to create and to be heard. Now, Nomozani was a Greek goddess of memory and mother of the muses. The story of Nomozani and her muses celebrates the skill and storytelling of oral cultures and the power of memory to capture and retain stories. Women have always been integral to storytelling cultures around the globe. Yet for the most part, in many settler colonial nations like Australia, and in the small towns nestled within, this role has been erased or silenced. Nomozani South Coast Women Journal celebrates the power and vitality of women's storytelling and acknowledges the deep connection that many South Coast women, particularly Indigenous women, have with the bush, the mountains and the sea of the New South Wales South Coast. Nomozani South Coast Women's Journal was born out of frustration, but also hope. As women who have been historically silenced and structurally oppressed, our frustrations are legion. Yet our hopes and dreams have become a mechanism for change. Now, we would like to invite you all to be part of this change. We would like to produce a biannual journal that celebrates the stories, research and creative expression of South Coast women. It will be a journal about women, written and produced by women. We hope it will become something to cherish and will become a publication of regional, national and international significance. So we've asked you here tonight that you donate a few gold coins, or maybe just one, that will go towards the publication of our first journal. We are also launching a Kickstarter funding campaign and hope that you will give as much as you possibly can to help us achieve our goals. Now, here at Nomozani, we've been having many discussions about the nature of feminism in the 21st century. As a self-proclaimed feminist journal, many have asked us to define the term or explain why we've chosen to position ourselves as such. Some of us in the journal wear our feminism on our sleeves, And some of us are still coming to an understanding of what feminism means to us as regional women. Although we haven't reached a consensus on what feminism means, we did agree that this question deserved a wider audience and a chorus of voices. So that's why we have invited you all here today. And we have assembled a diverse panel to help us address some of these questions that we've been ruminating over and grappling with. So, without further ado, I would like to introduce our panellists. Dr. Annie Werner, who is the head tutor in the Faculty of Arts here at the University of Wollongong, also a dear friend and colleague. Annie likes to think of herself as the only PhD-qualified ex-vegan abattoir worker in Australia. She's also a bee, crochet, tattoo, fermentation enthusiast. She is passionate about food ethics, food sovereignty, and sustainable farming, and enjoys the emotional, ethical, ideological, political, sexual, and social challenges of inhabiting a non-reconstructed post-breast cancer body. Welcome, Dr. Annie Werner.
Thanks for having me.
We also have Laura Finlay, who is also one of the founding members of the Mozambique South Coast Women's Journal, one of my dear friends. Lorna is a feminist historian. She studied law at Melbourne in the 1980s. Lorna is an ardent feminist and has worked in the field of domestic violence. She now studies for her own intellectual development with her next research project to focus on the development and division within second and third wave feminism and what similarities and shared beliefs remain and whether feminism has lost its political voice. I'd like to welcome you, Lorna.
Thank you.
Indigo Walker. Indigo is a 16-year-old writer and maker who recently began homeschooling to achieve a deeper education. She's also the founder of the local business Topsy Turvy Intimates, which makes underwear out of recycled materials, and they are beautiful. So welcome, Indigo Walker. We also have, last but certainly not least, Taz Fitzer. Taz is an art student at the Beak campus of the University of Wollongong, an advocate for social justice, political enthusiast and country Labor candidate for the 2016 Bega Valley Shire local government elections. I'd like to welcome Taz. Good. So as I mentioned before, some of us have often been asked how to define feminism. As a movement for change, it's gone through many changes. As Lorna has recognised, second waves of changes. As an ideology that some believed emerged in the capitalist West, it has been critiqued, condemned, and reimagined as more women seek to include their voices in the push for equality and social justice. So I'd like to start with Dr. Annie Werner.
Oh, Dr. Annie.
I'd like for you to just talk to us a little bit about what feminism means to you and how you go about defining it.
I think it's it is a necessarily nebulous term that I think defining it actually detracts from the power that it potentially has as an ideology. So I think, you know, for me, explaining it to my daughter, she's 11, I kind of talked to her about just general equality and questioning the things and the structures and the systems that we actually take for granted in terms of the ways that they control and influence our lives. So I think for me, I guess at the root of me calling myself a feminist, it's about questioning the status quo and questioning the structures around us that influence us, and some of us may just take those as being like air, you can't see them, and they're just a thing that's around us and that touches us. But I think a lot of those systems need interrogating, and so for me, being a feminist is actually about going, hey, wait a minute, that's not actually that awesome. Let's dig down into that and find out what structures are keeping that kind of feeling in place. Mm. When you were talking about defining, I was actually thinking about the cast, and I was like, it's the vibe. I think, you know, being able to understand the nuances and the inflections of feminism is really important. Also the intersections between feminism and other kind of activist movements.
Absolutely, thanks, Annie. So feminisms, many ways of understanding it. Taz, how do you define it? Or what does feminism mean to you?
We could probably talk for a good hour about this alone. I think for me, I see feminism fundamentally as a movement for equality. It's for everyone. It's for men and for women. I think there's a great misunderstanding from a lot of people, particularly today, that I see in comment sections online or whatever, that there seems to be a great misunderstanding about what feminism is. You know, you hear people say, oh, feminism, it's about hating all men. Don't need feminism because we have the same rights. And it's more today, I think it's less obvious than some of the battles of days gone by. And so for me, there are still some more subtle but still prominent issues that have to do with equality, gender equality specifically, but equality more broadly, that is the underpinning, I guess, reason that we should still be promoting feminism today and talking about it in forums such as this. So fundamentally, yes, I think feminism for me is about equality across the board.
Great. Yeah, feminist scholar Sarah Ahmed has stated that feminism is a sensible reaction to the injustices of the world.
Yeah,
so I think that nicely encapsulates that idea. Indigo, what does feminism mean to you?
Well, I think it means quite a lot to me. But when I was growing up, I guess there are, like, you know, those moments in your life where they're just little situations, but you just get this weird feeling that something's not quite right. So, like, you're in just an everyday situation, but maybe you're treated differently to the boy next to you, or maybe you're treated in a way that feels unfair, but it's not obviously unfair. And as I got older, I guess I realised that those were situations that was inequality, that was being treated differently because of my gender, or being treated differently because I was a girl. And actually, feminism to me means having a word and, I guess, a movement behind it that means that I can call it out, so I can say, like, you know, that's not okay and that's not equality. And I think feminism is really acknowledging that there is lots and lots of different things that we need to change about the society in subtle ways and in not so subtle ways.
Great.
Yeah, that's out of our debate. To me, feminism is so much part of who I am that I can't put it to one side and look at it anymore because it's me. Feminism has been around since the beginning of time in various stances. Movements have only been around basically since the suffragists. But women, individual women, for many centuries have spoken out and not been heard by many people. You've got Mary Wollstonecraft in 1700s, I can't remember, Vindication of the Rights of Women. That's a radical document. And when you think about when it was written, it was a really important piece that survived somehow. But the witches, the women, the healers of the villages, they got burned or they got hung for being strong women, not under the thumb of the church. I mean, that's why they were got rid of. And they were accused of witchery and disposed of. So the first movement came with the suffragists. Second wave is where I come in the 70s. And I guess that's what you call the second wave of feminism. And I embraced it. I walked into a women's centre, and as I said on the radio this morning, dear old Gough Whitlam, he funded all these women's centres in the 70s, and I walked into a women's centre and was so blown away by the concepts that had been troubling me, like you. There were all these things in my mind and I knew weren't right, but I didn't have the words to put them into any sort of conscious thought. It was just something was wrong. And I walked into a women's centre and I embraced feminism as being, this is who I am. And from then on, it's not stopped. It's changed. Everything changes. Your whole philosophy keeps changing. It was very radical back in the 70s. It was very radical and very outrageous in a lot of ways, but it was necessary. Today, I think, when I listen to Indigo talking, she didn't have exactly the same feeling I had when I walked into that women's centre. But her way of projecting out and changing things is going to be very different.
Mm.
And as an older woman, I sometimes have problems around some parts of what I see with young feminism now, but that's me being an old woman, not you know, I've got a lot of faith in younger people going forward.
Well, on the topic of change in the feminist movement, some believe that we've reached a post-feminist age, or that feminism has gone its course. Some suggest that there
academically,
some suggest that there can never be equality within the current structure, the current capitalist structure. And there's been a groundswell of women publicly denouncing feminism. It's interesting also because many public figures, and particularly some of our politicians, some of our women politicians, they tend to evade the question around feminism or not want to call themselves feminists. Mm. So I guess the question is it still relevant? And have we reached that post-feminist age?
It's interesting. When you just mentioned about politicians and female politicians as well not identifying as feminists, I think back to about a year ago, there was on Q&A, we had Michaela Cash, the Minister for Women, who, alongside Penny Wong and, of all people, Alan Jones, and that Alan Jones would stand up and say, yes, I'm a feminist, but Michaela Cash, the Minister for Women, would not at all. So I think when we talk about whether we've entered a post-feminist age, I think we need to unpack what we mean by post-feminist. Do we mean that we don't need feminism anymore? And if that's the question, then my answer would be no. If by post-feminist do we mean that we are in a society now where the movement is not being taken as seriously as it needs to be, or, like I touched on before, being completely misunderstood, well, I think that's a separate question altogether, because I think that there is a movement that, particularly with the rise of social media, where everyone's got a much bigger platform than they have in the past, there is a movement against feminism that, to me, goes to a great misunderstanding, like I said before, of what feminism fundamentally means and what it's about. So I don't think, you know, will we ever be living in a world where we don't need feminism? I don't see that in the near future at all. I think our role as people who take an interest, who feel passionately about feminism, and who believe in the cause, is to have events like tonight to get out there and say, hey, this is what it's about. There are real issues that women still face in our society that are going unchecked and unsolved, particularly when we attack the movements and the institutions that are there to combat it. So, yeah, I think we're living in a very interesting time for feminism, and, you know, just as important as it's ever been.
Mm. Mm. So then how do we, and I guess I'll throw this to Annie as well, how do we account for the rise of those anti-feminist movements? And in terms of its, is it because it's not resonating with some, or it's not?
I think because so many people find it threatening, whether because they just find it ideologically threatening or because they don't understand it. And so as long as there's feminism, there's going to be anti-feminism. I don't know that as feminists we need to account for the anti-feminist. I think it's more about opening discussions and you know, keeping, you know, like all of us have kind of touched on the idea that feminism and feminisms need to be evolutionary and they need to be revolutionary within ourselves, but also culturally. So I think it's more our task to kind of keep on with that revolution within ourselves and within the conversations that we're having. And I know for myself, like I came to feminism at a very early age, kind of deep in the bosom of second wave feminism. But now my kind of, I guess my area of interest and the value I see in feminism as an ideology, it has evolved, you know, completely. No, I mean, not to the extent that it's a different thing, but it has evolved in quite a pronounced and profound way. And I think that that kind of energy is what needs to be maintained.
Mm. Mm. Excellent. Energy.
And I think, sorry, just to jump in, but the other thing about sort of feminism in the 21st century is we're also a lot more willing, in a lot of sections of society, to have difficult conversations about what gender means, and gender norms, gender stereotypes, gender roles, and sort of to deconstruct that idea of what it means to be male or female. And so that, you know, talking about revolutionising feminism, that's a conversation that is more, not completely widely accepted, but more widely accepted today than it may have been in the past. So that is another element of the whole discussion that I think, like you said, whether people feel threatened, these are things that people have held on to in some cases all their lives. For decades, there's been an idea of what it means to be a man or a woman. And so moving into, is this a post-feminist age, that can, for a lot of people, be really threatening in itself.
That could be the pullback. Mm. So, is it still relevant, Indigo?
Well, when I hear the term like post-feminist phase, I think of like this beautiful utopian land where I swan down the street and the first thing I see is this billboard with a woman who looks like a real woman on it, and she stares back at me and there's a thumbs up and it says, "You're doing okay." And then I keep walking and I walk past a group of young men and there's no fear. I just keep walking. They smile at me, it's nice, it's a pleasant interaction. And then I walk home late at night and it's dark and it's cold and I keep walking through those bits with no street lights and it's great and it's awesome. And to me, like that, like when I hear the term post-feminist idea, like I just think, yes, that sounds awesome, but I really don't think
we're
that's
not there yet, are we?
We haven't reached that utopia yet.
No, we're here.
But I think, so is the question, is it still relevant? I think it's really relevant, but I think there's a lot more subtle ways in which we need feminism. So I think, for example, as a young woman, I see all the images about young women in all the magazines and all the billboards in all social media. It's just not realistic. It's just not fair, actually. And it's teaching young women like myself to have such unrealistic expectations of what we're going to look like. And so you grow up with this feeling like, oh my God, I'm never going to be enough. I'm never going to be thin enough. I'm never going to be whatever enough, you know. And I think that's actually really damaging, and it's a lot to carry around with you. And I think that when people say, oh, we don't need feminism anymore, they kind of think of, you know, the typical things like, you can be in a highly paid job as a woman, you know, you can vote as a woman, you know, you can own money, you can own property. And it's like, yes, but those are actually sort of basic human rights. They're not kind of like utopian, brilliant, amazing things that we have to be really thankful for. They're kind of like, yeah, we should expect that, but we should also ask for more, I think.
Well said. And certainly a big feminist issue that you spoke about then is representation. Whereas some Marxist feminists, they talk about, well, you know, it's not so much about representation, it's about structural inequalities and talking about. And there's a quote there about, well, you can't dismantle the master's house with the master's tools. You've got to create your own tools. So, Lorna, what do you think of that idea?
I'm just so blown away by what you're saying. I really am. I mean, you're talking about the objectification of women, but what went through my mind immediately when you said that is also the objectification of young men too now, within that capitalist system, within media, and, you know, the increase in eating disorders with young guys as well. It's just that whole objectification thing. But where were we? The new form.
Is it relevant? I think that was
yes. Oh, is it? Yes. Absolutely it's relevant. I don't know if anybody here knows of an 80s pop group, well they weren't pop, they were alternative, called the Au Pairs.
Yeah.
From England. Yeah, they got a thing there, because we keep talking about equality, one of their songs is Different But Equal, and that's what we are, we're different to me. Always will be. I will never have the body strength, even if I worked out forever, of a guy. Mick could probably beat me with an axe. But we're different. Men and women are different, but we should be both have equal respect within our society. And at the moment, it's not happening, and it's almost like there's a death. Look, one of the things that really upsets me is because my background is domestic violence and rape, and one of the things that upsets me is that I don't know how much the deaths and serious injury from domestic violence are increasing, or whether it's just become more prominent. But I believe it's increasing.
Mm.
Deaths certainly are. I think last year we were up to 2 a week, which is a phenomenal amount of people, women and children. I forgot the other thing I was going to say, but I'm sure I'll remember.
No, and it's
got to be, we're not post-feminists. As you said, post-feminists would be wonderful to be in a post-feminist era, but we're not. And in a lot of ways it's more subtle now, it's more... back in the 70s and 80s, we were man-hating lesbians. We had hairy armpits a lot. We were awful. there was a need for that then. There isn't now. The young people now, they're taking their own slant on where feminism is going. And I think it's in good hands, actually. I think it missed their mothers. No, offence to
But we might come back to where feminism is going right at the end of our panel. But I want to stay with the idea of representation and bodies, because I think that's very important. And Indigo, as you rightly point out, now these inequalities are a little bit more subtle, because bodies do matter and representation matters, and how women's bodies are spoken about, represented, impact on how they move through the world. And as you point out as well, Lorna, it often leads to violence. Mm. So violent words lead to violent actions. We've also recently seen the rise of fat activism. So with the proclamation of, you know, self-proclaimed fat feminists, and they're demanding that the experience of fat women be added to the narrative around bodily autonomy. So bodies are certainly a feminist issue, because women are also often positioned as utterly embodied. So if men are of the mind, then women are of the body. So for the panellists, I want you to perhaps talk to us about how you perceive your own body and how women and men might overcome some of the barriers to bodily autonomy that sort of plagues us.
Are you looking at me because you want me to go first?
Yes.
Well, as some of you would know, I've recently undergone a kind of full frontal confrontation of my own embodiment as a feminist, but also just as a human in a system that is actually not that humanist. So I was diagnosed with breast cancer at the age of 35, and subsequently have undergone a double mastectomy, which I chose not to have a reconstruction, basically. And it was fascinating to me, utterly fascinating, because as a kind of, born in the bosom of second wave feminism, I was like, oh, that's okay, I don't need boobs to be a functional human in the world, you know, I breastfed my children, it's all done, I don't need them anymore. What was really fascinating and shocking and confronting to me was the response of other people to my decision at that age to not have a reconstruction. And it was actually just fascinating to me at every turn to have all these people kind of going, but you should have a reconstruction. I mean, you've got the whole rest of your life to live. Like, why would you want to do that with no boobs? Why, that's okay. So And that kind of highlighted to me something which I'd never thought about. And it was interesting to me even to think about the fact that I'd never thought about it, was how invested so many people are in normative female bodies. And then I kind of started thinking about the fact that a reconstruction for me, a full boob job, and I could have had any size. So I could have kind of come out of it all Pamela Anderson.
And they wouldn't have sagged.
They wouldn't have sagged, correct? All paid for on Medicare, right? And this was completely fascinating to me because I'm thinking, wow, yes, it's great. Some women who have a double mastectomy want to have a reconstruction and that is important to them, and I'm absolutely not arguing against reconstruction. What I'm arguing against is our culture's investment in normative female bodies. And that, and you know, all the, you know, a lot of the backlash that I had in speaking out about my choice not to be reconstructed was, but it makes women feel better if they're reconstructed. Yeah, it does. But why does it make women feel better? And that is, you know, coming back to what I was saying originally about feminism being about kind of interrogating those structures, you need to ask the question behind the initial question. So the initial question is, there's nothing wrong with the reconstruction because that makes women feel better. But why does it make them feel better? Like, what is in place that makes that a kind of recuperative process for someone? And so, yeah, my kind of recent research work has been in kind of interrogating embodiment and our kind of cultural investment in breast cancer, actually, as a disease, a disease of populations. Like, it's quite phenomenal, and the way we are responding to that, which I don't want to go into detail now, but yeah, so it's, yeah, it's been a really interesting journey, also just confronting journey for me to actually realize, like, oh wow, I actually really liked having big boobs and now I don't have them anymore. Yeah, so all of these kind of questions arose.
Important ones too. Now, India, I'm going to move to you because in your business you design lingerie for young women, so you're designing clothing to cover women's bodies. So how do you approach these issues?
Well, I think, so is this sort of how I feel about my body and how?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, as you can tell, I'm not like a very, very small, very, very tall, very petite model. Like, I'm just not, like, that's just not who I am. So I spent about the last 6 years of my life, so actually, no, since I was about maybe 6 or 8 was when I started realizing that I was not that and that I was never going to be that, and that really sucked for me. And I remember being about in year 2 and I remember looking down at my stomach and just thinking fat and just being like, that was it, and it was just a blanket statement and that was what I was. And you just, like, and from then on it kind of grew, and then you'd start thinking that maybe all your friends were skinnier than you were, and then maybe you were fat, and maybe you were the fat friend. And actually, the older you get, the more you realize, like, what if I was fat? And what, would that be bad? Like, would that be the end of the world if I was fat? And would it be the end of the world if I was the fat friend? And would it be the end of the world if not everybody thought that I was thin, or not everybody thought that I was attractive? And I think the older I get, the more I realize that, you know, it doesn't really matter, and that it wouldn't be the end of the world, even if I was a size 25 or something. Like, it wouldn't really matter that much to me. But also, I developed really young. So when I was about maybe 11, I started developing breasts and I started developing hips. And I went to Mumbler School, so it was quite a small primary school, and no one really made any comments, and it was very peaceful and calm. And then I got to high school, and it was like a shitstorm. It was so full on. And so I started getting, I get about 3 to 5 comments a day about my breasts from people, from boys of all ages. And what I noticed is that the boys weren't the meanest, because the boys would be like, oh, you've got big boobs. And you're like, I do. And that's fine. But the girls would start, it was like a threatening thing. So girls would start being like, oh, I know why they're sitting next to you. Like, and you'd be like, oh, I don't think they were sitting next to me because of my boobs, but whatever. And then it would just keep going. And then so eventually you'd find that some girls just wouldn't quite, like, there was a lot of judginess, and in some way people thought that you were sexualizing yourself from just sitting there having whatever size boobs you had. And it was really hard because it was like, well, actually I'm wearing school uniform, and actually I'm pretty covered, and actually it stresses me out when I'm not covered because everyone's always looking at me and making all these comments, and like, you're just trying your best to be very, like, small, and then everyone just hates you for it. And it was full on. But underwear-wise, making underwear for young women has been really cool. It's been really cool designing underwear for women of all different sizes. And it's been really interesting because, like, you know, you get used to you being a certain size and then lots of people you know being a certain size. And so, like, usually when you're making underwear for them, you can just kind of, like, try it on over your clothes and be like, it'll fit. And then if you get someone who's, like, a lot bigger or a lot smaller, you're kind of like, okay, so I've got to rely on my sewing skills to make it so it'll fit someone who's not my size, which I think is the basis of being, you know, a semi-professional sewer, I guess, is sort of being able to make things that aren't exactly your size. But it's been really interesting. Mm. But also trying to be really conscious with what models I choose and trying to be really conscious with what image I want to put out there, because I don't... I know I feel excluded when I see a brand that only gives you sort of skinny white girls. Like, it's just, and they look young and they look like they're 11, but actually I'm not designing underwear for 11-year-old. I'm sort of designing them for teenagers and women, and I want my models to look like women and look like the diverse and amazing kind of people we are.
Mm. Excellent. What do you think about these issues that the other panelists have brought up and as a man moving through the world?
Yeah, I think a key point that's sort of been going through my head as I've been listening to everyone talk on this is that I think there's an issue in society where generally we allow men to own their sexuality in a way that women aren't afforded. So, you know, if a man goes out and, you know, goes around the town and does that sort of thing, oh, he's a legend, that's great, good on him. But if a woman does it, she's a slut, she's a whore, it's terrible, you know, where our morals are. And so I think those sort of attitudes feed into this wider issue of representation and body image, because it's like this double-edged sword. On the one hand, women aren't allowed to own their sexuality, but on the other hand, everything seems to be hypersexualized.
Mm.
You know, Indigo talking about, they must just be sitting with you because of your breasts. It's like, you know, it wouldn't happen in a conversation about a man.
Mm.
You know? And so I think that issue of allowing women to own their sexuality, allowing everyone to own their sexuality, but there is a stigma within society around women and an issue, is a huge problem. And the other thing I just wanted to touch on briefly is, we talked about representation, and we look at how in the media, in TV shows, in movies, we look at stock standard female characters that are represented, like Anne Somerset, you know, when she, like in the 70s, it's either God's Police or Damned Horse. And it's important that the media, that they have a big role to play in this, in sort of touching on what Indigo said, promoting multifaceted women. I'll give you one example. I'm a big fan of Doctor Who.
And of course,
of course, very recently we've just had the announcement of the first female Doctor. Fantastic actress, by the way. Great, wonderful. It's been very interesting to see the response. Now, this is a 2,000-year-old, time-travelling, two-hearted, body-changing alien who has, I think at this point, had 13 different faces. The show is based, it's not in 1963, this is a show based on change. That's the only way it survived. The fact that people have found this leap that this, and might I say, it's also been well sort of ascertained in the series that this is not an unusual thing, it's easy to happen, but the comment that I found the most interesting is actually one of the former male leads lamenting that young boys would be losing a role model. And so, there's been 12 of them so far. But that's what I mean, you know. So this is a character in the media, a representation who's this, you know, the, in my view, one of the most wonderful examples of a superhero. You know, intelligent, witty, compassionate, kind. Representation like that in the media matters. It's important. And I think it was a wonderful move. I think Jodie Whittaker is a wonderful actress. And yeah, I think that's a key part in this.
So bodies and representation, Laura.
Yes. Well, I have to say something here because I'm post-menopausal woman, which means that I have no sexuality anymore. I'm just a dried up husk. It's what it feels about.
not so bright out, actually. I'm a little bit overweight. But it's you're not seen as a woman anymore once you've gone through this. You're just seen as a... I don't know what you're seen as. You're not seen at all. You're not seen, are you? They walk past you in the streets. And it's like you're not there. And, I mean, I hated when I was younger being all frizzled out, and I still hate that concept. But at least I got noticed then. I don't even get noticed anymore.
Can I just weigh into that? Because I also am postmenopausal on account of chemotherapy. And I obviously have no breasts anymore as well. And I went from, you know, having big boobs, and I always wore low-cut tops because I liked my cleavage, and it was very nice. and now I'm, like, super flat. And the way that I move through the world now is profoundly changed.
Absolutely.
But it's profoundly changed in that I don't get the male attention that I used to get. But it's also changed in that I seem to confuse more people now. And depending on what I'm wearing, like obviously I embody my gender in a kind of female-ish way, in that I wear skirts and stuff. But sometimes I don't. And at that time, I can see people being like, man or lady, what's going on? and so I think like blocking the kind of gender stereotypes that we all use to make sense of the world is actually... I mean, it's kind of funny, but it's, again, it's really fascinating to go, wow, people are actually really attached to being able to tell if people are men or women, and if they can't tell, it's very like, I don't know how to talk to that person.
I mean, I was dyeing my hair last night, as you can see, and as I was dyeing, I was thinking, what are you doing that? Well, partly I do it because I had black hair when I was younger. And I couldn't dye my hair in the 80s like everybody else was doing because it was just too much hassle. And now I've got white hair, I can dye it, which is fun. But then I was thinking, am I doing that so I get noticed? And to some extent, that's true. You know, it's like you stand out as a person and not just an old person. And particularly now, because I've got a little bit of disability happening, old age disability, I have to stop myself from doing that shuffling along with my shoulders down and stand up straight and, you know, I'll be a person again because it gets like, vanity.
Mm.
Vanity doesn't go, it doesn't matter how contradictory it is to who you are, you don't give a shit what you look like. I mean, you are who you are, who you are. And if you're big, thin, old, young, shouldn't matter.
Mm.
But bloody hell, you should have seen the drama that Nancy and I were going through about getting a picture of me on the poster for this forum. And as it is, the poster she's got is about 12 years old, and it's pixelated. And there's no way. I took so many selfies that you wouldn't believe it, not one of them passed. So I made her go with a pixelated old one of me because I looked better. Now, that's not a very good feminist.
Well, we can be bad feminists, as Roxanne.
But I also think, like, you know, you're entitled to feel like that completely, but it doesn't... I think the big thing I come back to when I was saying is you're completely entitled to want to look how you look, to want to act how you act. That doesn't entitle other people to assume that means I can do whatever I want.
That's
and I think
true.
That's the big issue that we look at. Like, going back to women being able to own their sexuality, people in general should be able to do what they want, but that doesn't give anyone else the right to decide, well, that means I can do this or this.
Yes.
And that's the big issue.
And you've hit that on a nutshell there. So it's okay to be vain.
Absolutely.
Well, so are we having the same discussions about bodies and representations now as we did back in the 60s and 70s?
Oh,
or have those discussions changed?
No, it's much more advanced now than it used to be. When I first became involved in feminism, and I discovered my sexuality at the same time, or I came out. Like, you had to wear, and this was in Darwin, mind you had to wear kinky overalls, boots, and have short hair. Now, I don't know if anyone's been to Darwin, but that's a really uncomfortable situation. So I refused, and I used to wear sarongs, or those long wraparound skirts, and I'd just pin them up and wear them. And I was told I wasn't a lesbian because I wasn't wearing the right clothes. And, I know it's so stupid now, but it it wasn't then.
But that was the same, even for me coming out in 94, 93
and you wore skirts.
Or 94.
Yeah.
No, but I understood. Like, I understood just from observing the culture. Katie Lane was my only role.
Yes.
Like, I look at young people coming out today, I'm like, so many role models! Katie Lane. and she was fine, but it was like, oh, short hair, pants. And then it wasn't until I got to uni that I realised, like, oh, that's not actually the rules.
No. But no, there's a lot more freedom now than there was back then because people were... isolated into little, like they were a little group against the world. And it wasn't such a little group actually, there was quite a lot of feminists there and a lot of action happened, but it was against the rest of the world. Mm. If you look at today, we're not fighting the same battle, even though we talk about feminism not being an accepted thing. It's a lot more accepted now than it was. And if you look at things like, say, gay marriage, mm-hmm. 20 years ago, not even discussed, not even thought about. Look now, something like 78% of the population is in favour of gay marriage. I mean, that's a phenomenal change. Mm. And I think, believe it or not, if you leave aside all the violence towards women, in a lot of ways, things are changing.
Mm.
I'm totally contradicting myself, but... hopefully you know what I'm saying, like, things are changing.
And that's a good segue into our final question. Where do we go from here? Now, we've got the rise of online feminism. Some people wonder where feminism has gone, but if you interact in online spaces, then feminists in online spaces are fueling the feminist movement at the moment. And there's also the rise of popular feminism that's essentially made feminism more accessible for a new generation of women. But yet we've still got very active feminists like Gloria Steedman saying that we need to put our bodies where our beliefs are. So she still believes that we need to be out there marching and picketing and campaigning for change. So where do we go from here? Do we need a new form of activism?
What did you think, Indigo?
I think for me, where do I go from here when I think of that? I think that in everyday life, I need to be responsible for calling out things that I don't like and calling out things that I don't like when other people are treated that way. So for me, it's not when you're at a party not putting up with drunk 20-year-olds being dickheads and listening to them. Like, to me, that's saying, okay, well, this is an environment that I could sit here and listen to and it would be fine and no one would get hurt, it'd be fine. Or I could say, actually, I'm not interested in doing this and I'm just going to walk away from this and that's fine and I'm not... I don't feel like because they're men and I'm a woman, like, you know, it's kind of like saying that there are certain things that I won't put up with and there are certain things that I'm not interested in listening to and that if I was a man, I wouldn't be expected to listen to. Mm. Like, if that was five drunk women, they wouldn't be listening to them. Mm. So it's kind of like... And also really working on the way that I relate to other young women and really realising that there's a big culture of, you know, women oppressing women and young women bitching about other young women and you judge yourself against all your friends and all the people who aren't your friends and kind of coming to a place of realising that actually we're all facing the same challenges and we're all on the same sinking ship and, like, let's work together and work it out. But
Would you march?
I would if I had an opportunity to do it.
Right.
It's sort of hard in Bega.
Yeah.
Not much is going on, but I do.
There's been a few reclaimed the nights in Bega, but not that many.
Well, I think this forum's a good start.
Yeah.
So, Taz, we've got calling out sexism in all its forms and being accountable as a young woman. Where do you see feminism going?
I agree with a lot with what Indigo said. We this is a movement that has been around, you know, survived through the 20th century. It's an adaptable movement. It's adapted to fight the new fights that have come along throughout the 20th century, from the suffrage movement to the fights of second wave feminism in the 70s and 80s to what we're looking toward today. So we just keep doing that. We keep calling out inequality where we see it. We keep advocating for what we believe to be right and proper and feminist.
Mm.
And we just stick to our moral principles and we continue the good fight.
Mm.
And it will adapt naturally. We, you know, new challenges will arise and as feminism has done over the past century, it will adapt with it.
Mm. Excellent. Annie, where do we go from here?
Yeah, well, I think it was totally fascinating. I'm wearing my feminist killjoy today, which is a term coined by Sarah Ahmed, who you mentioned earlier, which is exactly what Indigo said. It's about calling out inequality. It's about calling out injustice. It's about calling out just kind of inappropriate, like, well, that actually makes me really uncomfortable to do that. And like I said at the beginning, it's about questioning the systems that make us feel and think the way we feel and think. Because we don't, as much as we might like to think we are, or as much as we maybe don't think about it at all, we don't actually exist in a vacuum, and we haven't self-formed ourselves. Like, we are responding to culture. And I think we don't have to be passive victims of that culture, and we don't have to be passive victims in terms of the things that we accept about the way that the world works. So for me, you know, being a feminist killjoy, like, you know, it's very tongue-in-cheek, obviously. It's like, well, these feminists just party poopers. But it is. It's about, you know, it's about embodying that and questioning those structures and those systems, and but not on a kind of necessarily on a massive kind of meta-structural kind of level, but actually just in day-to-day structures that exist that we all interact with all the time. And just like, oh, that's weird. Let's talk about that weird thing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
let's call it out and look at it.
Yeah, and question yourself. Question yourself and question your friends, and not in an antagonistic way, but and, you know, don't give yourself a hard time, but, you know, like myself being kind of thrust into having to question what I understood of myself as a feminist, and realising that living what I believed of myself as a feminist is actually really hard. And every day I kind of go, well, maybe I should have just gone to Reconstruction because that would have been really easy and my clothes would have looked nice. But it's like, nice. Who says they would have looked nice? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, so it's all of that stuff.
Keeping on questioning the probing.
So I think, personally, listening to everybody on this panel and the amount of people that have turned up tonight, I think feminism is in good hands. First wave, second wave, both happened during periods of total unrest within their communities. Mm. So maybe the next full-on wave, per se, will happen when Trump and North Korea start building up nuclear bombs. Who knows? Something that will sort of change world politics. Because I think they're connected.
I'd just like to take this opportunity to thank you all for coming out tonight. I'd like to particularly thank... And I would like to particularly thank our panellist, Dr. Annie Werner. Taz Spitzer. Indigo Walker. Lorna Findlay.